Welcome to Local Talk Monday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, flying solo as your host for the next hour with invaluable help from Cynthia McClure, our engineer extraordinaire, who's pushing all the right buttons to get us on the air today. Thank you, Cynthia. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll preview an exciting new broadcast that you're soon going to be able to hear right here on KHOI, one that promises to bring you an up-close and personal look at the presidential candidates who are making their way through the state. Later, the newest member of Iowa's House of Representatives, Ross Wilburn from District 46, will step into the guest chair right here, live. And after that, we are going to hear about an upcoming special event here in Ames, a symposium on diversity and inclusion from representatives of the Ames Chamber of Commerce and the city's Human Relations Commission, who will join us here live. First, on this Monday, let's take a brief look at what we can expect weather-wise this coming week. We're going to be warm and partly cloudy today and tomorrow, with our high temperature for the week coming tomorrow about 90 degrees. Then we're going to cool down by midweek with temperatures in the 70s, delightful late summer weather. We might even have some rain, and we certainly got a lot of that early yesterday morning when that big thunder boomer rumbled through. Now, as we always do on Mondays, let's take a look at what made news around the state of Iowa last week, and some of it was made by 4th Congressional District Republican incumbent Steve King, who said that humanity might not exist if not for rape and incest. King made his comments at the Westside Conservative Club at Urbandale on Wednesday. He was defending his position against laws that allow abortion exceptions in cases of rape and incest. His comments drew immediate reaction from Republican Congressman Liz Cheney from Wyoming. She is the third-ranking Republican in the House of Representatives. She called King's comments appalling and bizarre and said, in her words, it's time for him to go. One of his Republican opponents in next year's primary, State Senator Randy Feenstra, said King's comments diminish Republicans' message and damage their cause. J.D. Scholten, who is running for the Democratic nomination in the 4th District, said that King was putting what he called his selfish, hateful ideology above the needs of the people of the 4th District. In the world of presidential politics, Iowa style, the Des Moines Register reported last week that the Democratic candidates had collectively held more than 1,000 public events this year alone in Iowa. Since July 1st, they've added more than 400 events to their travel schedules. There are so many candidates, the Register decided to ask visitors to the state fair how many they could name. Fairgoers could name, on average, fewer than 8 of the nearly 24 candidates. Meanwhile, Linn County Auditor Joel Miller said last week that Iowa's voting system is vulnerable to hackers, something the Iowa Secretary of State's office said was not true. After that, it turned into a verbal free-for-all. A spokesman for the Secretary of State called Miller, quoting now, willfully ignorant. Miller responded, accusing the Secretary of State's office of character assassination. And so it went. In another story, another Miller, this one being State Attorney General Tom Miller, said he was blocked by Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds from joining 21 other states in suing the Trump administration over a policy that relaxes restrictions on coal-fired power plants. Miller, who is a Democrat, said he had asked Reynolds, who is a Republican, if he could join officials from those other states in the lawsuit. Also last week, sports gambling became legal in Iowa. That's right. 7 Iowa casinos took their first legal sports bets on Thursday. Another 10 plan to follow suit in the next few months. Iowans now can wager on 26 professional or college sports leagues or organizations. We are the 11th U.S. state to legalize sports betting. In a related story last week, a legislative panel voted to delay part of the new sports gambling rules, the part that would let the state collect some of the winnings of gamblers who owe child support, back taxes, or criminal debt. The State Administrative Rules Review Committee approved a request by some casinos in the state to delay that part of the rules so that lawmakers could draft a bill next year that clarifies how they want debts collected against sports gambling winnings. Also word last week that the Hy-Vee chain was investigating possible security issues with payment processing systems at the chain's fuel pumps, drive-through coffee shops, restaurants, and store-owned Wahlburgers locations. Those security issues may have left customer payment information vulnerable. In Warren County last week, it was back to square one in terms of trying to build a new county courthouse. The supervisors rejected all the bids that had been submitted to build the new structure. Warren County voters had approved spending $30 million for a new and improved courthouse in Indianola, but all the bids that were submitted were way over that. In Lyon County last week, a sheriff's deputy died after a crash involving her patrol vehicle. Deputy Stephanie Schruers died 4 days after her sport utility vehicle ran off a road while entering a sharp curve. Governor Reynolds ordered all state flags to be lowered in remembrance of Deputy Schruers until sunset tonight. Meanwhile, a firefighter in Iowa died after a vehicle struck him while he was riding his bicycle. 49-year-old Devin Estrabrook of Letts was on U.S. Highway 61 in Muscatine when a vehicle going in the same direction struck him. That vehicle left the scene and authorities were looking for the driver. In Marshalltown, fire destroyed a downtown commercial building on Friday. The 5,000-square-foot Morford Construction Building on Madison Street was a total loss. No one was injured. In Collins last week, a 30,000-gallon tank containing ammonia started leaking. Hazardous material teams rushed to the scene on Railway Street. A few homes were evacuated. No one was injured. There were several stories of note involving crime last week. Two Central Iowa people who had pleaded guilty to charges of kidnapping and child endangerment were each sentenced to 30 years in prison. 31-year-old Alex Craig Shadlow and his 40-year-old girlfriend, Tracy Lynn Tyler, had been accused of continuously confining Shadlow's 8-year-old son in a small room underneath the basement stairs of their Ackley home for at least 9 hours a day. In Waterloo, a woman was charged with child endangerment causing death just weeks after a 2-year-old boy died after taking her prescription medications. Authorities said 38-year-old Amanda Leonard Hellam drove the toddler, who police said she was adopting, from Waterloo to Des Moines, and that's when the boy accessed the pills. Toxicology reports showed he died from an overdose. Meanwhile, the man who has admitted fatally stabbing former Iowa State University student Celia Barkane Arosemena last year wrote a letter to a judge last week and apologized for the killing. Colin Richards has pleaded guilty to first-degree murder. He'll be sentenced to life in prison next week. In his letter, he said he wants to show remorse for, in his words, stripping a life from society. And that, quoting again, "I want the family and you to know I'm sorry." In another high-profile case in Iowa, lawyers for the man accused of killing University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts asked for a delay in the suspect's next court appearance. Christian Bahena Rivera was supposed to return to court this coming Friday, but his lawyers said they need more time to review evidence in the case. In Altoona last week, police were hunting for an armed man who had robbed a restaurant. No one was injured, but Adventureland Park's opening was delayed for about an hour while authorities combed the park for the suspect. In Minnesota, an Iowa pastor was arrested last week on charges that he sexually assaulted 2 girls at a home in Nebraska. 44-year-old Emmanuel J. Rodriguez was picked up on a Nebraska warrant on charges that he assaulted the girls in homes that he owned in Omaha. He is the pastor of the Calvary Assembly of God Church in Council Bluffs. Meanwhile, more than 24 people across Iowa were said to be facing criminal charges last week as a result of federal drug and gun investigations. At least 78 guns had been seized. In Ames last week, an animal control and shelter discovered about 100 living and dead exotic animals at an apartment. Officials called it one of the worst animal hoarding cases they had ever seen. The creatures included fish, geckos, chinchillas, parakeets, cockatiels, rats, hamsters, a water dragon, a frog, a python, and more. In other news, the Des Moines Register reported last week that an Iowa girl got sick this summer after being exposed to a toxin from blue-green algae. The youngster suffered a headache, rash, diarrhea, and more. The Register reported that the child might have avoided getting sick if the state had followed federal recommendations about when to warn families about when it's unsafe to swim in Iowa's lakes. Instead, the state relies on less restrictive World Health Organization guidelines about when to issue swim advisories. In Des Moines last week, word that the downtown homeless shelter would build a 24-unit apartment building for the chronically homeless so they can have permanent, affordable housing. Central Iowa Shelter and Services recently received nearly $3 million from the National Housing Trust Fund program and from the State Finance Authority. The apartment complex is going to be built on stilts in the water retention basin in the 1400 block of Mulberry Street in Des Moines. The stilts will let water flow underneath the apartment units when the basin fills up during a flood. Sounds like a good idea. In other news, the president of Simpson College announced he's stepping down, but he'd continue serving until a new president is found. Jay Simmons said he believed the time was right for new leadership at the private school in Indianola. Meanwhile, at the University of Iowa last week, the newly hired vice president of diversity resigned. Tawan Wilson said he was leaving after a little more than 1 month on the job. And one more story of note from last week. A piece in the Des Moines Register yesterday, which was closing day of the Iowa State Fair. Maybe you saw this one. The story was about some of the crazy stunts The fair pulled way back in the late 1920s and back in the 30s to try to get people to attend during the Great Depression. So the story mentioned five such stunts, including the human cannonball. Yes, they had a human cannonball. An airplane dogfight. A small plane deliberately crashing into a house on the fair's grandstand. Yes, that actually happened. Locomotive crashes. Yes. Trains intentionally crashing into each other head-on. And the best-loved stunt of them all, the Iowa State Fair elephant. Her name was Baby Mine, and Iowa school kids helped buy her in 1929. She appeared at the fair for years, fabulously successful. Quite some stunts indeed. Now, of course, nowadays, the fair stunts involve the newest, craziest food on a stick that someone can come up with, but so far no one has been able to come up with Baby Mine Elephant on a stick. And that is your summary of the week's news from around the state. Now stick around, because after this brief time out, we're going to be right back with some more news, this time about a new program right here on KHOI, and believe me, we're all excited about it. And after that, Iowa's newest member of the State House, scheduled to be in our guest seat, and you won't want to miss what he has to say. If that doesn't get your heart pounding on this Monday, I'm not sure what would. Stars and Stripes forever, of course. Welcome back. It is 15 minutes past the hour. I'm Dennis Hart, your host on this Local Talk Monday, right here on KHOI Community Radio. We are very proud to announce that we're going to be bringing you a new feature starting at the end of this month. It's called 2020 Talks. It's going to be 3 minutes long and come to you 5 days a week, covering the presidential candidate race as it develops right here in Iowa up until caucus time. You're going to be able to hear it on KHOI at 6:57 a.m. right before the first broadcast of Local Talk, and again right after our Local Talk broadcast at 12:55 p.m. and 7:55 p.m. Now, this is going to be a national show coming from right here at KHOI Studios, produced by Pacifica Network and a national news service called Public News Service. They've hired an executive producer to work right here in collaboration with KHOI's reporters and staff. Her name is Lily Bulkey, and she has moved to Central Iowa to work on this program at KHOI. We are excited to be hosting this show, which is going to feature this first-in-the-nation process that is so unique to Iowa, the caucuses. Ursula Rudenberg asked Lily to introduce the show to you in this recorded interview.
2020 Talks is going to be a three-minute daily radio show tracking the caucus process here in Iowa. So we'll be talking to candidates, we'll be talking to Iowa residents, anybody who has thoughts on the process, and how does this grassroots process affect the election.
You've been here now for a little more than a week.
Yeah.
In Ames. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, well, I'm originally from just outside of Boston, but I went to Grinnell College, and I just graduated this May. So this is my first job out of college, which is really exciting. And I love listening to radio, so I'm really excited to get started here and see what the world of radio is like.
One of the great things about the Iowa caucus process is that there's this period of time between the soapbox and the actual caucus when a lot of issues can be discussed, what people really feel strongly about. Tell us what you've been doing.
I've been to a lot of town halls and meet and greets. I started at a good time, I would say. Right when I started, all of the candidates were in town for the Des Moines Register political soapbox at the Iowa State Fair. And there's such a wide range of venues that these candidates go to. The first event that I attended was a meet and greet with Ohio Rep. Tim Ryan. And it was at this arcade/bar timeout in Nevada, and there were pinball machines and games going, and there were lots of kids in the audience. And I thought that was just really interesting, especially an established politician to be willing to just kind of hang out at these small places wherever in Iowa. And I've been learning that a lot of people in Iowa, whether they're, you know, Republicans, Democrats, or go either way, they're really curious about these candidates. And they really do want to ask them questions about the issues, whether it be climate change or immigration. Iowans are just very interested in the political process. And I think they take this responsibility of being first really seriously.
The staff of one of the candidates told me they think of Iowans as kicking the tires.
Yeah, it definitely seems like people have lots of questions, and if they're not satisfied with a candidate's answer, they'll follow up and ask the question that they really want to know.
You also went to the Forum on Gun Violence?
Yeah, that was a really interesting event. Because all of the candidates were in town after the recent mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton, Gun Sense advocacy groups organized a forum in Des Moines because all the candidates happened to be in town anyway. And it was at the Iowa Event Center, just this huge venue, and there were all of these people there, survivors of gun violence and other gun activists in the audience asking questions to all the candidates. And a lot of them shared their stories and why this matters to them. And they also got to converse with the candidates. So it was really fascinating to be able to hear all of their different ideas and be able to really easily compare them since they talked about it one after the other.
And then you're going to be heading to Western Iowa at the beginning of next week.
Yeah, next week there's a Native American presidential forum. A number of candidates, they're going to be talking about issues that impact Native Americans. And one of the candidates is a Navajo person who is running as an independent.
Are you planning to cover the Republican candidates as well?
Yeah. So Bill Weld, who's the former governor of Massachusetts, he was at the Iowa State Fair. That was his first appearance in Iowa so far. He compared himself a lot to Trump, so he talked a lot about Trump. And so it'll be interesting to see where he goes.
Lily, you are actually not an employee of KHOI. You're an employee of Pacifica Radio Network and Public News Service, an arrangement that we set up because I work for Pacifica. But it was also designed to enrich KHOI and provide more resources to this radio station. Talk a little bit about what your relationship is to the show and who you're working with?
I'm really excited to be the guinea pig, I guess, for this partnership between Pacifica Radio Network and Public News Service, because they both are really valuable organizations, and that they're able to come together and do something like this, some election coverage that they have neither of them have really done before, is really exciting, and I'm thrilled to be doing it. Lark Corbet is the director of Public News Service, and Lisa Loving is a radio station manager in Oregon. They're both helping me out a lot and giving me guidance on my show, feedback on my scripts, who I should talk to, and what kinds of things I should cover. And it's great to get guidance from these established journalists as a young person entering the field. It's been really cool so far. Public News Service is a nonprofit journalism organization, and they have like news services in many of the states, almost all of them. And they do radio reporting and then sort of boost it out to other media outlets to try and have a grassroots approach to journalism.
And Pacifica Network is the organization that actually is my day job. And that's also a national organization of community radio stations. Pacifica owns 5 radio stations in large metropolitan areas, but then it has about 225 affiliated independent stations like KHOI who don't belong to Pacifica but take some programming from it and cooperate with the other stations in the network. So it kind of puts KHOI on the map. And it's all because we're Iowans, first in the nation.
Yeah. During the second semester of my first year of college, I was able to participate in the caucus because I was going to college in Iowa, living in Iowa. So I registered to vote here. And it was really interesting. It was something that I had never experienced before, because back in Massachusetts, we have primaries. So my parents would always go and just cast their ballots at the primaries. And so I never really knew about this process. But when I went there, I was really shocked because there were so many people gathered in this big room. And it was surprising how much conversation there was. It didn't seem quite as like organized as I would have thought, but in a really like fascinating way. And it was a great experience. It was really neat, and I think it's a really interesting thing that Iowans do and want to stick to. Seems like we don't want to get away from this caucus system, which is really interesting.
We do have some candidates that come in here to the station, so we're trying to establish KHOI as a media hub for candidates in central Iowa, and it's starting to happen. So this is kind of a group project between Pacifica, Public News Service, and KHOI.
I just started working here at KHOI, like you mentioned, a little over a week ago, but I've gotten to know a lot of the people here really well, and a lot of the reporters here have really good advice and are just really good to work with.
So there's kind of a group effort going on here at the station. We could use a few more volunteers to help gather sound and also to listen to all of the things that we've recorded, to log them, to write down what we have so that we can go through the information faster. And we also plan to put a lot of the audio on our website, and that requires somebody to do that. So if you're listening to this and you think this is interesting, and it is very interesting, come on down to the station. We've got lots of work for you to do. Lily could use certainly some assistance to help her get through this. 3 minutes a day doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a rigorous schedule, right, Lily?
Yes, definitely. Because there are so many candidates and they all do so many events, there's a lot of audio to both record and listen to. So it's definitely going to be a rigorous schedule, but I think it's also going to be a really fun one. So I'm looking forward to it.
It's very fun. It's very exciting. And it'll culminate. We will do live coverage of the caucuses here from KHOI. We'll be broadcasting nationally on caucus night. We did that in 2016, and we will do it again this time. And that's also a really exciting process and really fun to be part of. So we're excited to have a national program coming out of KHOI. We're situated in First in the Nation territory, and this is a really exciting time.
I really enjoy politics, so this is just a great opportunity for me, and I hope to be able to inform you guys with what's going on, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Thank you. And this is community radio doing what it's supposed to do. Thanks, Lily.
Thank you.
And thank you both, Ursula and Lily. We look forward to bringing you 2020 Talks at the end of this month, starting at 6:57 a.m., and again, right after local talk broadcast at 12:55 p.m. and 7:55 p.m. This is an experiment, and we think it's going to be highly successful. Your way to stay in contact with the Iowa caucuses. Number of things happened this past weekend I want to talk about here. I want to compliment the folks at the Senior Variety Show at the City Auditorium. That was a marvelous broadcast, a marvelous show, rather, on Friday night and Saturday, Cynthia. And hundreds of people attended. And there were several people from KHOI involved. Paul Wearson, who co-hosts with me on Friday, had a role in there. Roger Berger.
Oh, yeah. Roger, I produce his opera show and his curtain up show that he he's the co-host with Carol Horowitz, and I also engineer her KHOI Previews the Arts along with curtain up.
Roger was dancing with his lovely wife Kay. They periodically appear at the Senior Variety Show. Marvelous performers, and everybody up there, of course, they're seniors. And it takes a lot of courage to be on that stage, a tremendous amount of courage. These folks, some of them are scared to death. Some of them have some experience, but I have to compliment every single one of them for being up there. What a marvelous thing to do.
Would you ever go up there and do your thing? What would you do if you were to be in the Senior Variety Show next year?
I'd have to play the part of a news announcer, I guess, right? And I'm not sure there's a big demand for that, quite frankly.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem all that entertaining. But, yeah, no, I would love to do that. I've done some stage work, not a heck of a lot. But, you know, being a broadcaster, I'm comfortable in front of people and an audience and all that. And it's my age range, right? I mean, all the people in the audience, virtually all of them were my age or a little bit older. And so I'm comfortable with that.
Well, I know that you have to be a certain age to get into it. And if you are even a month shy of that age, you have to wait till next year. They're very sticklers for that.
I have reached that age, though, I'm afraid.
Are you sure?
I think so when I look in the mirror. Congratulations to all the folks at the Senior Variety Show. One more note before we get into our big topic here. Roosevelt Park Summer Sundays music series. We used to live at Roosevelt Park, and we have to admit that the Summer Sundays musical series is a marvelous thing. Roosevelt, of course, was the park left barren when Roosevelt School, the elementary school, was abandoned, not shut down, but abandoned by the district 20 years ago. And the park could have had some serious problems, and the neighborhood could have had some serious problems. But to their great credit, they have banded together. And, of course, the Jensens came together and renovated Roosevelt Elementary School, turned it into condominiums. And the Summer Sundays group has been doing their musical performances, Cynthia, for, oh, gosh, many years, and we have donated to them. Every summer for 14 or 15 weeks, they have different musical performers out there at 7 o'clock on Sunday nights. Last night was their last one. Want to congratulate the Summer Sundays people. You do a marvelous job out there at Roosevelt. We are very proud to have you in our community. You've done a great job with the neighborhood. Thank you for giving us another summer full of entertainment. And now our guest has arrived, and thank you, Ross Wilburn. Welcome to KHOI.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You are the newest member of the Iowa House of Representatives. You represent District 46, which includes Ames. I met you a couple of days ago. It is a pleasure having you here on KHOI. A lot of folks have heard of you, but some might not have, because you sort of came out of, I don't want to say nowhere, because you've had a successful career, but in politics you're brand new. Tell us a little bit about your background, Ross.
Well, actually, I have 12 years in elected office and 4 years in appointed office.
But not around here.
That's
Iowa
absolutely
City.
Right. That's absolutely right. So I just wanted to be clear on that.
What did you do in Iowa City?
I'm a former city council member, 12 years, and I served a term as mayor in Iowa City and was very glad to do things like sign the 2007 U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement to make sure that we've got a vibrant downtown. Also spent some time with our human services, but with our business community, trying to unite the two. We dedicated portion of our community development block grant funds to minority business support. So those are the things I did there. But as soon as I got, I've been here for 5 years at the end of September.
What brought you to Ames?
I was invited to apply for a position with Iowa State University Extension and Outreach, and they made me an offer I couldn't refuse at the time. But I had the option of living anywhere from Des Moines up to Story City, and I said, well, I'm going to come to Ames. I actually had some history here in Ames back in the early 1990s. I helped train some of the youth workers at Youth and Shelter Services with former director George Belitzos there, and still some of his staff that back then are still around here. So I bumped into a couple of them a few days ago. But as soon as I had the opportunity to come here, I just wanted to make sure that I was around a university community. I enjoy the vibrancy, the diversity that a university community brings, as well as just the creative thought and scientific thought. So I've got to come here to Ames.
Did you have any intention when you first got here of running for public office again?
I wasn't looking at that. I had served 12 years in elected office, and I didn't say I would never run for office again, but if an opportunity came up where I thought that I could help make a difference to bring a voice to community members who didn't have an opportunity to have that type of input, and that if I felt that there would be a group in the communities that I lived in that would support me in office, whatever that office might be, then I would do that.
Now, Lisa Hettins was the longtime representative from District 46, mm-hmm. and she rather stunned the political world months ago when she announced that she was leaving that to apply for the Board of Supervisors, wanted to become a member of the Story County Board of Supervisors, and she was appointed. When she announced that, or when you found out that she was wanting to be appointed to the supervisors, did it kick in, I want that seat, or did it take a while?
It took a little while. I had been approached by a few community members. I'll be honest, the thought had crossed my mind. I said, well, let's think about whether it would be feasible. It's a special nomination process that involved the Democratic Central Committee, at least
right.
the district folks getting together. And a lot of people weren't familiar with that process, and even some of the precinct chairs weren't familiar with that process and the role. But again, I've been here almost 5 years, and as soon as I got here to the community, I jumped right in with volunteering with the Story County Democratic Party. I've always been active in the parties and the communities that I've lived in, and I just said, let's go ahead and give it a try. If I'm not successful in winning the nomination, at least I can help bring some issues to the table. And that's the most important thing, just bring some issues to the table. And if people can support me, that's great, and I'll do the work. If they were not going to be able to support me and support one of the other candidates, then hopefully my bringing the issues to the table would help inform and educate them about issues that I had brought to the table. And that was the case. I ran for governor this last cycle. And there were all but one gubernatorial campaign had a chair or a inside committee party candidate person approach me mm-hmm. and say, we're glad that you ran because mm-hmm. you got our candidate to talk about some mental health issues. You got our candidate to talk about some disproportionate representation. You got our candidate to talk about human trafficking.
Yeah.
And so, again, there's a role to make sure that community issues are brought forward.
And you just mentioned two or three issues. Let's talk about your priorities as a brand new representative. What do you really want to focus on?
Well, during the campaign, I've got a cowboy card here with me. because I've done a couple interviews and folks say, what are you really going to do? Well, you pick three. That's part of the process in running. And I mentioned supporting public schools and universities, create green jobs, reform mental health care. And mental health care is something Lisa is very passionate about, and that's something that I continue to try and hope to bring to the table with her work during the gubernatorial campaign. And during this campaign, albeit short, I talked about trying to make sure that there was a comprehensive mental health care system in the state, especially involving our children and youth. If young people are not able to participate and contribute in their family and their neighborhoods and their schools, it's untapped potential mm-hmm. that we don't, as a community, get to experience. I have a background in human services. I have a social work degree, a master's in social work. Mm-hmm. And so also I mentioned earlier having trained some youth workers at Youth and Shelter Services, mm-hmm. mental health issues are not out of my arena, even though right now I'm doing community development work mm-hmm. with Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. I also mentioned we had at Extension and Outreach, we had a rural issues summit last week, and I was approached by a university faculty member that said, congratulations. And the next thing that they said was, I really wish you could say more about Iowa State University because mm-hmm. he hadn't seen me do that. And so looking at my cowboy card, it says support public schools and universities. Ross will ensure Iowa State University and Ames Public Schools receive prompt dependable state funding, et cetera, et cetera. But it just goes to show that it's as an educated there's an education role as an elected official that we have to continually inform the public not only what's happening in this case, what will be happening in the state house, but to continually let them know what I am hearing as a representative from people to make sure that they're pointed. And to this person's credit benefit, they had been out of the state for a while, but it just goes to show you that, you know, it's hard to stay on top of issues as community members. We're all busy people, and, you know, with this election process, regardless of the office, they tell you to pick the top three issues, but, you know, how many of us are only affected by three issues in our lives?
This is one of the most divisive times in American politics that I can remember in my lifetime. I mean, I go back to the Vietnam War days, and I remember those days. But this, it seems to me nationally, and you're nodding, you're probably in agreement with me, no one is willing to compromise right now. Democrats are not willing to compromise with Republicans and vice versa on the national level. There's a lot of hatred out there fomented by social media, by cable television news. You know this. How do you feel, or can we ever come together again on a common purpose of compromise, whether it's here in Iowa or across the country? Or are those days just gone?
I don't think those days are gone at all. And, you know, you mentioned back in the late 60s, early 70s, but, you know, if you look historically in this country, there have been nasty times politically. There have been traumatic issues that have, you know, torn the nation apart, and things kind of cycle around. And Martin Luther King Jr., the quote, and I'm paraphrasing, the arch of moral justice bends towards the arc of history bends towards justice. And I believe that it just takes people to come together when they realize enough is enough. Let's start working together. Let's start working against hate. What's a difference is you pointed yourself out with the ever-present social media, the 24-hour news cycle.
Yes.
It's just always there, which people who hate and groups who hate, they use that. They use that 24-hour, 7-day-a-week cycle to do that. And so the rest of us have to be willing to speak up and show support and not hate in return, but show love and respect and try and work together to change the tide.
And that's something that no generation of politicians until this one in the last 10 years has had to deal with. Twitter wasn't around
right.
in 1960 or 1990 or even 2000, and now it's become a cesspool of hate for the anonymous people to get out there and just blowtorch everybody. Facebook has become, in large part, a cesspool of a lot of negative things. How do we overcome all that? How do we do that?
It goes back to that same thing. You've got to start talking about, you know, whenever there's stories or people pumping out information about some negative incident, there are plenty of positive things that happen around town. I just heard you talking about the senior
variety show.
I almost said Olympics, but
not yet.
Well, my I'll be 55 next month, and my daughter's trying to convince me to jump into the senior Olympics. I might do it. You know,
there you go.
But you know, so the rest of us can start. It's not that we're ignoring those stories. Tragic incidents, hate-inspired incidents, but we can talk about those, but let's make sure we're putting out, you know, the example of some positive things that are happening in the community. I think that's critical for young people to hear older people talking about that it always hasn't been this way. I mean, they've grown up knowing this is the world as it is, but we can start talking about the world as it can be, because it has been before. But if they're not hearing that, all they're getting is the, you know, the hate, the negative, you know, and it's hard for them to develop hope unless we are hopeful ourselves.
Ross Wilburn, you are a delight to talk with. Will you come back?
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to.
All right. Ross Wilburn, our new District 46 representative from the Ames area, recently elected, unopposed, I might add, and that's a testament to the power of your campaign. Congratulations on your election.
Oh, thank you so much.
Stay with us. This is Local Talk on KHOI, and after this brief timeout, we will be right back. Thank you. Oh, that's nice. Very nice stuff from Dave Brubeck on this Monday. At 19 minutes before the hour, you are listening to Local Talk Monday, and I am your host today, Dennis Hart. Pleased to be joined by two more guests, as well as keeping our first guest here. We're joined by Andrea Dodge and by Joel Hochstein. I hope I got that correct. I did.
Got it.
Joel is the chair of the Ames Human Relations Commission. Andrea is the vice president of the Ames Chamber of Commerce. And still with us is Ross Wilburn. And we're going to talk about something that's coming up next month, something that's very exciting. Not next month, October. And I understand it is a symposium on inclusion, equality, inclusive organizations, how to build inclusive organizations. So talk about, first of all, what you're going to talk about.
So on October 29th, we are hosting our second annual symposium on building inclusive organizations. Uh-huh. And that really came out of a trip that the chamber took to Columbia, Missouri a couple years ago. And just realizing that we need to start the conversation on building a more inclusive community and more workforces so that our workplaces so that we can attract more talent and continue growing our community in a good direction. So this symposium was started last year. It's a half day, and it's really we have a great keynote, and then we have breakout speakers, so we can really dive into some of the topics that our attendees have asked for. So we surveyed them at the end of last year's event, and we surveyed them again this summer to see what topics are on their minds. And we're working right now to find the right breakout speakers to meet their needs.
And what topics are on their minds?
Employee resource groups. So a lot of our attendees for this event are HR professionals, business leaders, community leaders, but they all have some kind of responsibility for hiring and managing employees. So the employee resource groups is a big topic that people are talking about right now. We are doing an ISMS. We have Kaysla Scott coming from Grinnell College, and she was our speaker at the NAACP banquet in January. And she'll be coming and doing a long double session, basically, on undoing our ISMS. And so we're really excited. We just booked her last week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super excited about her coming.
Yep. So, Joel, we talked just before we got on the air here, and I asked you a question, and I told you what I was going to ask you so that you weren't blindsided by this. Why is a Building Inclusive Organization symposium needed, and you know why I'm asking this, needed in a community like Ames or in Iowa where we are largely homogenous, if you know what I mean? Why is this needed?
Yeah, I think that's that's exactly the reason why we need to be engaging in conversations around diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? In Iowa, we are a largely homogenous, mostly white, community. So when we talk about or don't talk about race, that has an impact on folks of color in our community. It also has an impact on white folks in our community. And so when we can engage in conversations in the community that really allow folks to bring their full selves to the table. We have, better schools. We have better businesses. We have better churches. We have better community when we can create those spaces for everybody.
Now, Ross Wilburn is still with us, our District 46 representative. Thank you for staying with us, Ross. You attended last year's conference on diversity. Your impressions of its importance?
It was very well put together, and it was important for the chamber, the city, and the university to come together on that. Mm-hmm. And during the earlier segment, you had just asked the question, what can we do with all the hate in the world? This is exactly the type of community forum, community conversations, an opportunity for people to hear what our differences are. And when we hear and learn what our differences are, it really brings us together on what we have in common. So mm-hmm. that's the type of respectful conversation that happened. There were informative sessions. I was there in a supportive role with Iowa State, Dr. Reg Stewart and his crew over there. I work with them as part of my diversity advisor hat for extension and outreach. But this is exactly what can help us combat the hate that happens in the world.
A lot of it out there, and Ross, you and I just talked about the hatred going on in politics across the country. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we're seeing it in our culture, the mass shootings that we've recently had and the threats that continue to be made. What's all of your – and I want to ask each of you this question individually. What's your impression of the climate here in Ames? Are we relatively inclusive, largely inclusive? Are we exclusive? How do you sense how we are in Ames. Start with you, Andrea.
I think we are we're working on the upswing, but I think that we, as a community, aren't talking about our differences, and we're not coming together and celebrating. So I feel like we're, but I feel like there's enough of organizations and groups and volunteers and people who are really passionate about it who are working towards bringing everybody together. It just hadn't been done yet.
It hasn't been done.
Mm-hmm.
Now you say people don't talk about it. Is it because we don't have a need to talk about it, or why do you think the conversation hasn't taken place?
We've talked at our planning committee level. You know, there's a downside to be Iowa nice, and that is to be passive aggressive and not talk about things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Joel, what's your impression?
So I think that's a really loaded question.
Well, I didn't want to make it too easy.
No, I respect that. So I think that there are certainly parts of the community, as Andrea indicated, some of our nonprofit organizations, some of our volunteer groups that are really diving into what does this mean for various populations? And they're out there doing some of the grassroots on the ground work. What I've seen over the last probably couple of years is this kind of groundswell of wanting to engage in conversations on diversity, inclusion, and equity in the community. I think a lot of that has to do with Dr. Stewart and what he's done at Iowa State and how that's gone into the community, the importance of that, and how that's transcended outside of Iowa State. And so I really think that that's been a catalyst in the community to start engaging in these conversations. So I don't know, to answer the question, are we an inclusive community? I think that's a really loaded question. I think for some we're more inclusive than we are for others.
By loaded, you don't mean an unfair question.
No, I don't think that's an unfair question at all.
Ross, what's your impression?
One of the things that Dr. Stewart would point out, I'm on an advisory commission for him, is that we did a climate survey at Iowa State, and there was I don't recall the proportion. I want to say it was around 15%. Don't quote me on that. I can get you the survey of Iowa State staff, faculty, and students who did not feel welcome here, and. You could look at it and say, well, okay, that's 10 to 15%. That's not that many. But, you know, this is a university community. And if there are that percentage that are saying they don't feel welcome, it's important to look into that and to try and discover what the rationale, what the reasoning is for that, and then try and look for ways to help people feel welcome and included.
Mm-hmm. Were those folks who said, and perhaps you don't know this one, I'm just tossing this out, who said they did not feel welcome, were they all individuals of color, or was this having to do with sexual orientation part of it, or do we know?
Part of it was the LGBTQ plus community. Part of it was people living with a disability. You know, there were I don't remember if the breakdown included veterans, but just anecdotally from some veterans that I've spoken to, that there have been concerns about not feeling welcome. And you have to remember, it's not just a lot of times people think of overt actions, or they'll think about the South, you know, things that happened in the prior to the 70s. Well, in some ways, still happen down there. But as part of sometimes that Iowa, and as some of the you know, it's more subtle ways that maybe a conversation or someone not understanding a particular statement that they may have made was offensive to faith. That was part of it, to people with a different religious background. And I mean, I remember seeing this was not here in this community, but a gentleman who was vehemently upset. I thought he was going to go over and attack this. There was some folks who were they were Muslim that were praying in the park. It was just a day at the park, and he felt it. They're forcing it on me. They shouldn't be doing that out here. And that's the type of, when people start hearing that, you don't feel welcome. Mm-hmm. I remember in another community in Iowa. This is just part of that unknown, people not being familiar. There was a family that were a group of them, type of reunion. They were from the Middle East. They were cooking, and it was a lamb that they were roasting outside. And a neighbor had called the police and said that someone is cooking dog at the park. And isn't that against the law? And so law enforcement went and investigated. No, it's, and then, you know, they tried it. But that's, again, just the unfamiliarity and people jumping. Sometimes when you're unfamiliar, fear will be the emotional reaction.
Joel and Andrea, based upon last year's attendance, and it was a successful symposium, whom do you hope attends this year? Whom would you like to see? Who's your target audience?
It's really built for people in the community who are leaders in their business or in the community who help us with the hiring. So anybody who has a position of power within their organization, whether it's a volunteer-based or paid role, people who are just interested in wanting to learn more and talk about it as with a large group. We're really excited to have some smaller breakouts that will allow the conversations to start from a big group down and break it down to small groups and start talking about whatever topics we have a few more we're going to finalize yet, right. Hopefully this week. So that's why I can't really tell you all of our breakouts right now. Definitely people who, it's definitely business or oriented. So it's about supporting our community, but it's truly a more business orientation.
What was the feedback that you got last year after the conference from those who attended? What did they say they got out of it? Maybe that's Joel?
I'm trying to think back to the survey. I think folks really so we focused mostly last year on the leadership imperative, which was developed out of Dr. Reg Stewart's office at Iowa State. I think a lot of folks kind of took away how they could maybe do some assessing in their own organizations and ways in which they could maybe potentially think about doing things differently from a leader's perspective, right? What roles do we play in that? So that was mostly what last year was focused on. And this year I think we're going to try and focus a little bit more on some of the individual populations. With Dr. Queso Scott, unlearning isms, I think, is going to be a really fantastic opportunity for folks.
And Ross, again, you attended last year. You, I presume, would urge people to attend here. What did you get out of that from last year?
I think what was just highlighted for me was just there were so many. I don't know the attendance numbers, but I mean the room was packed, and it wasn't just university folks. There were community, there were business, some faith-based folks who were there, and just it's me as a person of color. It's very meaningful that's a sign of welcomeness when people are opening themselves up to being vulnerable to say, I would like to learn a little bit more. So that gives me hope. And even though I'm part of my job at Extension Outreach is as diversity advisor and doing professional development, it helps motivate me to continue the work I do when people show up for events like this.
We've got about 30 seconds left. Let's talk specifically when it is, where it is.
It is on October 29th, and we're going to be at the Gateway Hotel and Conference Center. It's a half day, so we start at 7:30 and we wrap up at 1 o'clock. And registration is currently open on our website at aimschamber.com. It's like I said, it's a half day symposium. So we have some great speakers lined up, and the ticket is $100 per person and an $80 nonprofit rate.
Okay. Thank you folks for being here today. Andrea, Joel, Ross, a pleasure seeing you on Local Talk on this Monday, and we'll have you all back again. Okay. You have been listening to Local Talk. I'm Dennis Hart. Thank you so much for joining us. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. right here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the broadcast. And remember, the KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Almost impossible to miss us. Our theme song, as always, Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley, and a great lady she was indeed. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, come on down, we'll train you, and you can join the Local Talk team. And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you again on the radio. Thank you, Cynthia.